Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft. Today we are studying Malachim Aleph, Perek Gimel. In this perek, we're told that Shlomo HaMelech marries Bat Paro. The Malbim explains that after Shlomo established his kingdom in the midst of his nation, he established it also in relation to the kings of the surrounding countries by marrying the daughter of a great and powerful king in those days, so that he can gain an ally against foreign enemies. The question is, was this a good thing or was this a bad thing? On the one hand, it seems that it was good politically because it solidified Shlomo's foreign relations, since Mitzrayim was one of the most powerful countries in the ancient world, and he gained many things from his relationship with his father-in-law Paro: land, prestige, wealth, etc. On the other hand, it wasn't so great religiously. The Ralbag explains that even though Bat Paro did become a Gioret, marrying her was still considered straying slightly off the path of the Torah, because Mitzrim, who become Gerim, are not allowed to marry Jews until third generations away. And Bat Paro was obviously a first generation Gioret, and so this does pose a religious issue. Therefore, this first act of Shlomo's after following his father's advice last perek was not really such a positive one. Interestingly, unlike Shaul HaMelech, who had Shmuel to rebuke him for his wrongdoings, and unlike Shlomo's father David, who had Natan HaNavi to rebuke him for his sins, and unlike many later kings who heard rebuke from the Nevi'im of their own times, we don't find any Navi rebuking Shlomo HaMelech for his lack of good judgment in his marrying Bat Paro. Many of the Mefarshim claim that Shlomo's first marriage foreshadows his downfall, which was ultimately caused by his taking foreign wives. If this is the case, then this Bat Paro is the exact opposite of the Bat Paro that we met in Sefer Shemot. Whereas the first Bat Paro saved a young baby and raised him to ultimately become Bnei Yisrael's greatest leader, this second Bat Paro that we're introduced to in Tanakh brought Bnei Yisrael's great leader of her own time down from his high pedestal to the point of losing most of his kingdom, which again we'll see in later Prakim. Immediately after Shlomo's marriage, we're told Vayehav Shlomo et, and Shlomo loved. We might have expected the pasuk to continue with the words Bat Paro, proclaiming Shlomo's love for his new wife, which would make sense immediately after his marriage is described in the pasukim. However, the pasuk does not continue in that way, and instead continues in a much more unexpected way, proclaiming Vayehav Shlomo et Hashem. And I don't think it's accidental that Yirmiyahu, the author of Sefer Malachim, follows the narrative of Shlomo's marriage by proclaiming his love for Hashem. Rather, it was likely done this way intentionally in order to demonstrate that at least at this point in the beginning of his reign, Shlomo's love for Hashem still trumped his love for anyone else, even his brand new wife. To express this love that he had for Hashem, Shlomo, we're told as the parak continues, brings a karban on the large bama in Givon. Even though the use of bama will feature problematically throughout the rest of Sefer Malachim, in this particular instance, when Shlomo brings a karban on a bama, it was not problematic at all, as explained in the Mishnah in Zvachim, because the Mishkan in Shiloh had been destroyed in the time of Eli HaKohen, and the Beit HaMikdash had not as yet been built, and therefore bringing a karban on a bama was at this point halachically permissible. So Shlomo brings a karban, you know, to say thank you to Hashem, to show his love for Hashem. And that very night, Hashem appeared to Shlomo in a dream, asking Shlomo very famously for anything he wished. And, you know, just to take a moment to think about what any of us would do with that offer, right? Imagine that we, each of us, were given a chance from Hashem himself to be granted any wish that we chose. You know, what would we ask? What would we decide is the most important thing to us? Now I'd like to take another step back and think about what a typical king from the ancient Near East, or a typical ancient Israelite king from Malchut Yisrael, or really Bnei Yisrael, how do you think he would answer? Now, if you're thinking to yourself you have no idea how ancient kings used to think, there is a way for us to find out. In Devarim Perek Yud Zayin, Psukim Yud Dalet through Chaf, we encounter what's known as Parshat HaMelech, a parshia in the Torah that contains the mitzvot that pertain to a Jewish king. And we're told there that there are actually four mitzvot that are unique to a melech, to a king, in contrast to the rest of the Jewish people, or rather, I should say, in addition to the rest of the Jewish people. His first mitzvah is that he cannot have too many horses, and he can't go to Mitzrayim to get more horses. His second mitzvah is that he can't have too many wives. The third mitzvah written in the Parshat HaMelech is that he can't have too much money. And finally, the king, with his fourth mitzvah, must write down his own Sefer Torah, in addition to the Sefer Torah writing obligation that every member of Bnei Yisrael has, or every man in Bnei Yisrael has. The king must write an additional Sefer Torah and wear it on his cloak and read from it every day. And the psukim continue in that Parshat HaMelech describing that, or explaining that the kings need these mitzvot that are unique to them so that they don't become too haughty and stray from the Torah. What this tells us about the nature of kings is that their power can get to their heads. They're the most powerful people in their entire nation, and therefore they're at much greater risk of haughtiness and arrogance compared to the rest of the people. And because of this likelihood for haughtiness and arrogance, they may not as easily submit to a higher power than they. And so instead of following the Torah commanded and all the mitzvot commanded by Hashem, right, because that represents the will of a God before whom they'd have to admit inferiority, often what kings tend to do is that they prefer to amass all the worldly possessions possible so that they can expand their sense of self-worth and power. So therefore, when we hear of Shlomo's response to Hashem's question, it becomes very clear that he did not act like most kings. Because instead of requesting wealth or honor or anything else material, Shlomo requested, very famously, wisdom, chachma. Wisdom in order to help him judge his people, al pi haTorah, according to the very law before which he must acknowledge submission, and therefore admit his limited power. And not only did Shlomo respond differently than all other ancient kings would have, but he also responded differently than probably many of us would have, right? Going back to what we would have responded to Hashem if we had one wish in the world. And as a reward for Shlomo's lack of haughtiness and lack of desire for material glory, Hashem granted him the wisdom he requested, but even beyond that, because Shlomo was now going to be the wisest man of all time. So it's not like Hashem just granted Shlomo wisdom, he made him the wisest man of all history. And Hashem also continued to grant Shlomo everything he did not request: wealth, honor, long life, etc. Why did Hashem do this? Likely so that Shlomo could channel even the material things into his service of Hashem. And Shlomo expressed his gratitude to Hashem by bringing karbanot to him yet again the next day. Immediately following the episode of Shlomo's dream, we're told the famous story at the end of Perek Gimel of the two prostitutes, Zonot, who appear in the court of Shlomo HaMelech. And the question that many of the Mefarshim ask is, how on earth could prostitutes who belong to the lowest strata of society gain an audience with the king himself? That is not typically done, certainly not today, definitely not back then. But what this comes to teach us is that anyone who wanted could come to the court of Shlomo HaMelech to seek justice. Even the people of the lowest strata of society were able to access the king, which shows us a lot about the king's job and duty in Judaism to grant the ability to judge them to really to the entire people. To summarize the prostitute's famous story, it's very famous, but just to summarize quickly, there were two prostitutes who lived alone together, and they each had babies within 3 days of each other. The first woman who tells her story claimed that the second woman slept on her own baby accidentally in the middle of the night, suffocating the baby and killing the baby by accident. And upon realizing this, switched the babies so that she could have the living child. And this first woman would then would wake up in the morning and see that her child, which is not really her child, but who she thought was her child, was dead. When this first woman actually did wake up to feed her baby, she noticed that the dead baby in her arms was not her own. And the second woman claimed that the live baby was hers. When comparing each woman's argument, just even in the text, the first woman has a much more compelling one. In fact, the second woman doesn't even bring an argument. So it's likely that Shlomo already knew who was correct based on their arguments alone. However, to prove it to everyone else, as we all know, he ordered the baby killed to see how each woman would react. And in fact, the mother of the real mother of the baby, who just wanted her baby to live, no matter who would ultimately raise him, did not want Shlomo to cut the baby in half. And the mother of the dead baby, who was okay with this situation because then both of them wouldn't no longer have their babies, she was okay with it because now it would be even. The fact that this court case was included in Perek Gimel shows us the extent of Shlomo's recently God-given wisdom. It almost serves as a proof that what Hashem had granted him actually came true. And what's fascinating is that we see in Yeshayahu, Perek Yud Aleph, Psukim Aleph through Hey, that the ideal king, in other words, Mashiach, the Messiah, will be someone who has wisdom and understanding, counsel and strength, knowledge and fear of Hashem, judges the poor in righteousness, and rebukes the lowly of the land with straightness. And here in Perek Gimel, Shlomo is being described in the exact same way as the ideal king, a king who has wisdom and understanding, a king who fears God, who judges the poor and rebukes the lowly with straightness. He seems to be described here in Sefer Melachim Perek Gimel in just the same way as Yeshayahu describes Melech HaMashiach, the ideal king, in his own Sefer. And so we see in this Perek that Shlomo is certainly living up to his fullest potential as the king of Bnei Israel. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther, Malka Esther by Tzvi Yosef.